Tremblay, because he couldn't, he didn't make it at all, you know, when he ran for the Congress. I mean, he didn't even make it when he ran for county committee.
This is the time when he's running for the assembly. And this is the one Wade thought he would...
No, Wade thought he was going to run for Congress.
Oh, okay.
But this was the assembly in his district. Well, they wrote to every single person that signed their name and sent them cards and asked them to, if they would contact just, you know, lots of times they'll say 10 people or 20 and... Well, you'll just put it aside, but ask them if they would just contact two people that would be interested in, that would be interested in knowing more about Kinnock and that they would vote for him.
Mm-hmm.
So almost everybody knew two people that they contacted and they said they would. Well, those two people would get the same letter to ask if they would contact two or three, maybe it was three people, two or three people. Well, by the end of the, middle on in the campaign, they had a card file on over half the Democrats in the area. So then they would just write, they don't believe in wasting letters to Democrats that aren't going to vote and Democrats that aren't going to vote for you and all that. And so they wrote they put their whole campaign just to these people, because they had over the majority of them, they had so many by that time, and kept them up on the campaign and what it was doing next and where Kinnock was going to be and all this stuff. And then they had a telephone and people that saw each of those people that got to the polls.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all called on election day. And they got to the polls. So that really is a good gimmick, because our precinct list for all the Democrats and Republicans are listed. There's so many that have moved away.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many that they're supposed to be taken off the list the minute they don't vote, but they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And you waste so much money in stamps. And that's an awfully good system if you've got an office staff and can really do it.
Mm-hmm.
And he really did it. And old Johnny Johnson, so he got, I couldn't stand him because although he's done so much for me, he's made that clock for me, and he made that donkey out there for me, and he would work, I mean, he'd work for anybody that paid him. He'd work just as hard for a Republican, because he was a paid public relations. And oh, I'd argue, and of course he said he was a Democrat, and I'd argue and fight and fuss with him. And he said I was so unreasonable that he said if he was an attorney, he said I wouldn't care what case he took, that everybody had a right to be represented, that had the money to pay. So he said if anybody hires me, I give them my best, no matter what they are, whether I vote for them or not. Well, I don't know how anybody could do that. I think politics is like a religion. You work at it because you believe in it.
And you really believed in a democratic...
Why, of course I did. I just couldn't understand how... I can't see a chat.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he thinks I'm nuts.
Well, in all your working through these campaigns, let's say even up to this time, you're mainly doing the organizing in the offices, then?
Office. Get the office open and man the office. I man the headquarters here nearly all the time.
Mm-hmm. And
get
when
the precinct work going and things of that kind.
When you get near election time, then you start looking for a place for the headquarters for the people, or...
Yeah, now Kinnock already had his, but we got out the big CDC mailing up there. And, I'd go up there and just work all night. I had my great big dog. I'd work there, up there. I'd pass that old building on Signal Hill on Orange, and I think, yeah, I've been up there all night long, all by myself, working lots of times. And it never entered your head, but we'd get out mailings. That's one thing where the CDC came in. They'd give all the candidates that were endorsed by them a letter.
So someone who worked before the CDC and then... say during, I know we reach a later point where maybe not just yourself, but some other people became disillusioned with the CBC. But during the time, say, where it was at its height, did you have a sense that something really different was happening for the Democratic
Party? Oh, I mean, they woke it up. Because now if the state committee and the county committee had done the jobs that they were created for, there would be no need for it. Mm-hmm. But you'd elect the county committee, you'd never see them again or hear from them again. Mm-hmm. And they're very active in this assembly district, but they're not any active in the other one at all. But it's the CDC that started them active, because they were allowed to have delegates to the council, mm-hmm. and they just wanted to see what was going on. I mean, you'd never hear of them.
Were the clubs large in this area then?
Well, I was saying we had many more. When you're out of power, out of office, it seems you can generate. You'd think that right now, with the Democrats in this district, with almost every office but one, that the Democratic organizations would be so flourishing, and so the clubs, and there's just apathy. Mm-hmm. We had about 56 at this meeting for Travis, and when I'd get the state chairman in the 50s, when we were, why, we'd have 200. And it just doesn't seem sensible. I can't understand it. But I think there's an apathy in all organization now more than there was then. Now, in Alhambra, when, of course, that was the times favored us too, but I'd give a big picnic every summer in Alhambra City Park for Jerry Voorhees. It was just an annual thing. And we'd put out handbills, and we'd have 2,000 people. They wouldn't all come to the picnic, but they'd come to hear Voorhees talk. And even the Republican paper would report we had that many people. Mm-hmm. Well, we couldn't anymore. We couldn't fill. You could fill with Carter'd come. You couldn't get a big crowd, I don't think. I just can't understand it. Yeah. You had a rock group, you could, but. But Amina, you have some awfully good speakers at state, and do you have big crowds?
No, hardly any. Unless it's someone very, very well known.
Isn't that too bad? Because there are even those that some aren't well known, and some of them are pretty, pretty shrewd, mm-hmm. pretty smart.
Well, that used to bother the president, young Democrats.
Yeah, it's just so hard, and I just said I've spent nearly all my life trying to make people go somewhere when they'd much rather go somewhere. But you've just got to work on it. You just got to sit at the phone and hound and hound and hound.
When the time when there's more activism, let's say when Stevenson is running, and he's got, from everything I understand, a very grassroots support.
Yeah, Stevenson. Yeah. Well, he was just a fresh breeze, really. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Eisenhower, I think he just absolutely proved he could get along without a president. I just can't. but Stevenson, people said he talked over his head, but I don't know how. His speeches were the best speeches that ever were made.
You worked for him in a number of places.
I worked for him so hard in San Francisco.
Why did you go up there? Was that just...
Why did I go there?
To San Francisco.
Because Lou was laid off here, and he got a job up there with the Army Engineers.
Oh, so when you went up to San Francisco, it wasn't just to work for students?
Oh, no. It was really... Did I ever tell you that story?
Yeah.
Well, Buzz Davidson was the nicest young kid that went to Wilson here, and I appointed him chairman of the students for Stevenson. And his father was the head of the AP press here for the level, but he... Anyway, Buzz would work so hard, and he'd come up to our headquarters, and I'd give him another precinct. And finally, I asked him one day, I said, Buzz, because I saw he lived in the Bixby Knowles area, and I said, Buzz, don't you ever have the use of a car? Because he'd take the bus and go out and walk his precincts and come back. And he had a lot of meetings with young people, and he had an awful cute young girl that worked with him. Well, anyway... He said, well, yes, he says, I do, but he said, I'm not old enough to get a driver's license. He was a great big, I thought he was so smart. I thought he was probably, I could wonder why he was still in high school, because he was so big and intelligent. But anyway, he graduated real young here, and he went back to Chicago. He was so crazy about Simpson when he was running for Congress. And Simpson persuaded him to go to the University of Chicago, because that's where he graduated from. Well, and he couldn't stand it. He was a Californian. He just hated it back there. Mm-hmm. But maybe he went 2 or 3 years there, but the next time I heard of him, he was in Berkeley, and he had been home that summer, but I didn't get to see him. He always called me up. In fact, he still writes to me. He's an attorney in Washington now. But he wrote an article for the Berkeley, for the whatever their name of their paper is up there, on Stevenson, and a young fellow who was the head of the Prudential Life Insurance Company up there just loves Stevenson, and he was thinking of starting a Stevenson campaign, and he read this article, and he called the university and tried so hard to get him to come meet him, and they'd organize a Stevenson campaign. Well, he was just terribly busy, and he said he just couldn't do it. He says Stevenson was his first love, but he had taken on so much work and all this and this. But he said, I have an idea. I was in Long Beach, and I found out that a Mrs. Remley, who worked so hard for Stevenson there, has moved to San Francisco. And I'll bet she would work full-time for Stevenson and work for nothing. So she said, well, how will I find her? Do you have her address? She said, oh, I have no idea, but I'll bet if you'd call the Democratic headquarters, they'd probably know where she was. And so the next day he called the Democratic headquarters, and I answered the phone. he was told that a Mrs. Zeta Remley was in San Francisco, and that he would like to know how to get a hold of her. And I said, well, you've got her. I'm trying. And so he was so amazed over that.
So you had only been in San Francisco for a little while.
I had just been in, and I went up to the headquarters, because I was still on the state committee from down here, so I got to go to all their state committee meetings. So anyway, I just volunteered my time there. And Jane Morrison was Northern Women's chairman, and she had a big job with CBS Radio, and I just took over her work in the office. And he came the next day, and we had lunch together, and he was such a darling. He was such a nice young fellow. So we had the first meeting in my apartment there, and he had another young fellow that was interested in Stevenson.
This is the first meeting of Stevenson's campaign.
This was McElhaney. And so we elected him president, and I was secretary treasurer, and we didn't have a cent of money. So do you know what I did? I put an ad in the Chronicle, in the personals, Californians for Stevenson. Call and my number, and I put 535 Geary, San Francisco. So they thought maybe that was a business address. And you know, I was just flooded with mail from all over Northern California, professors at Stanford. I'd get $10, $20 money and checks made out to Californians for Stevenson.
Now, what year was this? Was this in 58?
This was in 60. This was after 60? He'd run twice.
Oh, okay. So this is...
This is later.
Mm-hmm.
It was 58 and 59 that I was doing all this work. Mm-hmm. And so the money just poured in. And so we had another meeting, and we got this little stamps that we had done down here in our council movement. We got blue and gold stamps and just vote Democratic, and we had 52 a sheet, and we sold them for a dollar. Oh, we made an awful lot of money on those.
Just stickers that people could put, say, on letters.
Yeah, put on letters, just vote Democratic. Well, then we got this way, said just Stevenson in 60 or something on it. So I started a card table. Didn't I ever tell you about my card table?
Is this where you went out near the theater or something? You just had a jar?
Well, yeah, but it was right on the street. And on Geary, right in front of I. Magnin's. And I had I started in for Californians for Stevenson, and I got, more money donated than we got a big headquarters on Market Street that we opened up. And
so
we,
this is just you and
McElhaney and Sperber. Then we got another fellow that come in by the name of Wesley.
This is in 58. Mm-hmm. And you would just advertise this thing in the Chronicle. Mm-hmm. And got all of this response.
Got all these people. We'd write to them all, and we sold these stamps all over the country.
So if people would send a donation into you, you'd send them those stamps.
How come they do that? I mean, we had to get no orders we had to get no permission. Then we wrote to a fellow in Minnesota that was said that he was head of the national campaign, but I don't think he was. But anyway, he was in touch with Stevenson in Washington or in New York and in Chicago. And he came out to see us, and he was just amazed at what we had going for us. But then we took over the whole Paramount Theater building for his headquarters. Mm-hmm. And we had the biggest sign that was ever made on a political campaign. Boy, we worked hard in that campaign.
So after you started sending out the stamps and things, did you set up the card table before mm-hmm. the
convention?
Did the card table was before you had the headquarters?
Because we didn't have any money.
I forget exactly the details of being there with the card table. And I remember you said you had set it up, and the manager.
The manager of the Macy's was just having a fit because I asked to speak. I asked to leave my stuff. I only lived two blocks from there, but I had to carry a big shopping bag full of Stevenson materials and pictures and my card table and a chair and all that. And so I just asked him
if I could. Did you go without Stevenson's really direct permission?
He didn't really know it. No, he didn't know anything about it. Well, he knew about it, but he didn't give us permission. And so I went around. I went up to see him to see if I could leave my card tables inside the Stockton Street entrance because I saw there was a little room in there. And I told you what he said, didn't I? When I went up to his office and I told him what I wanted, and he says, "Don't you?" Says, "I can't believe that an intelligent woman like you would be a Democrat." And he just acted so awful, and so. Then I thought, oh, well, I'm not getting anywhere with him. So I said, well, you know, I don't blame you one bit. I said, if I was in your seat and you came and asked me to do something for that Richard Nixon, I'd say, get the hell out of here. And he looked so shocked that he said, well, to show you I'm a better citizen than you, you can keep your damn gold card tables here. So he came downstairs with me and told the girl behind the counter that I was to come in and go and have the access to that room. But every day he'd come by and just sort of, brrr, the card table.
That you made quite a bit.
Oh, I can't understand it. People are either awful gullible or awful trusting. They're just terrific. I can't understand it. Because I remember, though, even during, they had a big doctor's convention at the St. Francis, and you wouldn't think doctors would do much. But boy, they'd come in and put money in that jar. Just great.
So that started the Stevenson campaign.
For 60. And then is there a Drucker, a nationally known writer?
Peter
Drucker. What did he do?
He's written some books on management.
Well, anyway, his son was sent out here. He was just about 18 or 19, but he was a smart little kid. But they sent him out from the Stevenson headquarters in Washington to work with us and to help us out. He must have been on the payroll from back there. But then Drucker and I came down here, and we got the whole Paramount Theater building. It was vacant. And we had, I had a woman that was a teacher here in Poly High, managed, we had a store downstairs, a vacant store that we took over for Stevenson Buttons and Stevenson Paraphernalia and all kinds of stuff. And, oh, we made more money there. But I never worked so hard for anybody in my life as I did Stevenson.
Do you find, though, that by 60, a lot of the people who... I guess what you're saying is that they hadn't, but it seemed that he had some people who were quite personally devoted to him that, I mean, really got enthusiastic about
Well, I think that was... We had a terrific campaign in Berkeley. All the intellectuals were all sure for it. Berkeley was... We had the best campaign. We had every bit... Berkeley would have gone for Stevenson big, but they were so discouraged at the convention. And more people came to that convention that were from districts where they had to vote the unit rule, that they were for Stevenson, but they, if the majority of their one, maybe one over them voted for Kennedy, they their delegates all went to Kennedy. But they all said they'd vote for Stevenson on the second ballot. But in a way, I think maybe the whole thing was futile because Stevenson didn't come out for it till near the end of the campaign. Then he worked awfully hard, and then he just worked among delegates. But you've got to really want it. And he had been defeated twice, and I don't know why he'd want it again, really. Be defeated by such a sap. But Eisenhower, nobody could defeat Eisenhower. I think just the slogan, "I like Ike," was worth $1 million or $10 million. It was just electrifying. Everybody had a father fixation and wanted old Ike to fix it or something.
Okay. Well, whatever reasons. We've covered from roughly about 1948.
But my hardest campaign here was in 58. I was managing, before I moved to San Francisco, I was managing Cranston's campaign in the district for controller, and I was managing Stanley Mosk's campaign for attorney general, and... then I worked awfully, and I had that's the only two paid jobs I ever had in politics. I was paid by the AFL-CIO for, yes or no on prop, there, they had a labor issue on the ballot. And I persuaded them, if they would open up the headquarters for the different, I had headquarters here on Anaheim and headquarters in the other district, and I opened up headquarters in about 20 of the surrounding towns. And I've got pictures of all my headquarters. They all took them in, and they paid for the headquarters, and they paid for an office girl, and it was supposed to be no on 14, I think that's what it was. They had a measure that they were just, that's one of the main reasons that we won in 58. We say it's just a democratic organization, but it was because that no on 14 labor, you know, they don't work, they donate money, but they really worked in that campaign. Oh, they worked hard.
And so the Democrats had associated themselves with one side of that issue.
Yeah, they all endorsed it. Their planks endorsed that issue. And it was against right to work laws.
Was it a fair employment?
No, it was right to work.
Right to work.
Yeah.
And it was organized labor.
Organized AFL-CIO, but they, instead of just giving the money to their candidate, they opened up the Democratic headquarters. They paid for the rent. And I got them to do that, and that was an awful big thing in that campaign.
You got them to do that here, or just...
They did it all over, but I was Southern District Chairman of L.A. County. I had Gardena and Redondo and Hermosa and Paramount, all these...
District Chairman for the no...
AFL-CIO, no on 14. And I read it from headquarters to headquarters. But boy, I was working at that time for Cranston, and Griffin was running for assembly here, and he didn't get it. Mm-hmm. But oh well, we didn't make
and
it.
And Brown is also running for governor.
And he was. We just swept the state, really, except in this district.
And so that was the year that the Democrats won every state
Everything.
Office except for the Lopez office. We didn't win, which was it, Attorney General?
It was Lopez ran for Secretary of State, I think. And he was a... he was a minority, nice young fellow, but oh, I got so mad at him because he was, we had a big picnic and he was invited to come down and speak at Bixby Park. Well, they got down, we waited and they got down here and they couldn't find Bixby Park. I thought that was awful dumb of anyone to start out for somewhere and not know where you're going. But, he had a pretty good campaign statewide, but just wasn't ready for a minority, I guess. Mm-hmm. But in all the years that Brown was governor, didn't we have a Democratic Attorney General?
Yes, I think we
had. He had Moss.
Yeah, Moss.
I think Mosk is one of our great men of this state.
Right, Mosk is Attorney General.
And I can't understand why Stanley is, I'm an awfully good friend of Stanley Mosk's, and I just can't understand why Brown didn't appoint him Chief Justice and appointed this other gal on the Supreme Court.
Yeah,
and also the Negro on the Supreme Court, which is the first time. I think, of course, Then Mosk is about ready to retire, and then give it to her. I think he would have been a lot less criticized, but I guess people forgot that now. At the time, there was an awful uproar about it, and she may be very, very brilliant, but I don't suppose you need judicial experience, but Mosk is so great. Mosk was appointed to the Superior Court by one of the deathbed appointments of Olson. And Colbert Olson.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, the decisions that he's made all through the years, he's made a terrific contribution. He's just a wonderful fellow.
When you're working on all of these, you worked for Moss and
for
you were saying that you were Southern District Chairman. Is your work always at this point the organizing of the offices? Did you ever do things with, say, fundraising or finances? Or?
Well, I didn't have, I'd try to get people to go to the affairs, but mm-hmm. for the personal, that's the big money is made by personal solicitation to people that have money,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't do that.
Who would generally do that in campaign?
Well, this district never had much money. We would raise money for the council mailing.
Mm-hmm.
And we gave every candidate, and now Simpson campaign, we had a fellow that just called on people all the time for money. He called on the attorneys and the judges for Simpson, and we paid, but I just didn't do that. I just, he had to get another finance chairman, because that's an awful hard job. I can sell tickets for things and make more money than anybody, but that isn't where the big money is, the money to run a campaign. Mm-hmm. It takes an awful lot of money.
So you're... The
I never would work on a finance committee.
Mm-hmm. You work in organizing volunteers.
Yes.
And
they used to give, we used to spend so much energy getting people to give house parties. And then we'd have to get the crowd. I'll give my home and I'll have cookies and coffee, or coffee hours we'd call them. But if they couldn't get the crowd, there wasn't much purpose in it, because I know I'd get a whole crew to come, or we'd go from one house meeting to the other. Well, but that wasn't doing any good.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd put out handbills and we'd do more things. Well, it didn't bring crowds. Mm-hmm. If they couldn't get their own crowd and call their own neighbors and friends, it just didn't pay or I come to that conclusion, mm-hmm. because we were just talking to each other. And yet they, I noticed that's where what's his name that ran against Hannaford, this little smart aleck, bright attorney. The doctor's son.
Right.
Nixon's son.
Lundgren.
Well, his whole campaign was on house meetings. Of course, he had thousands of dollars, and